Welcome. Well, hello there. Welcome to another episode of Getting Social with Miriam. In fact, this is the first episode of Getting Social with Miriam for 2015. How exciting. So today we have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about keeping your passion alive in relationships. And we're going to talk about how to communicate better in relationships, because today we have our guest, a relationship expert. Her name is Janice Hoffman, and she's going to help us understand why men and women think and behave the way they do. In June of 1996, Dr. John Gray, author of The Mars-Venus World, called Janice Hoffman, asking her to be trained as his first Mars-Venus facilitator. Since that day, Janice has facilitated hundreds of Mars-Venus workshops and Get Smart dating programs. What made Janice unique was her relationship with Dr. John Gray, creator of the Mars-Venus World. She quickly became the training director for the Mars-Venus Institute, and over the years, Janice helped train over 550 Mars-Venus facilitators worldwide. And as men are from Mars and women are from Venus rose to its ultimate success, Janice grew in demand as a professional speaker and relationship expert. Taking all she learned from Mars-Venus, Janice condensed the Mars-Venus philosophy with her own principles and created 12 easy-to-use yet specific strategies. She added a how-to for men and for women for each rule, quote-unquote, to ensure their success. Relationship Rules quickly won the first place with the Colorado Independent Publishers Association. So since 1997, Janice has presented her teen dating program, Get Smart Dating, to teens in Colorado. High school teens now have a place to learn what guys and girls are thinking and why they behave the way they do when it comes to dating. Janice is bringing Get Smart Dating to teens nationally this year. Keeping the passion alive requires relationship skills, and Janice Hoffman teaches men and women how to just do that and have fun while doing that. And I'd love to take this opportunity to welcome Janice Hoffman of Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Janice.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm really glad you came on. Very, very interesting bio you've got there. So I'm going to ask a few questions. So in the beginning of 1996, you worked for John Gray, as stated in your bio. So I'm just wondering, how did you exactly come to work for the Mars-Venus Institute? Like, how did they find you, and what was your role exactly?
You know, I have no other words to say, but I call it, you know, it was a God calling, because Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus came out in 1993, and I was I had my own meditation group I was teaching. I had been trained by another author who wrote Love Is Letting Go of Fear, that was based on the principles in the Course in Miracles. So I had an attitudinal healing support group, and then I had a Course in Miracles support group or study group. And when the book came out, I thought, oh, it's so popular, I'll start a Mars-Venus group here in Boulder. And I called the number in the back of the book, and I told them my idea, and I asked them, you know, if they had anything like that. And they said, oh, no, you know, we don't have anything like that. And I said, well, you know, thanks, have a nice day, and hung up and never really thought about it again. And 2.5 years later, in 96, my phone rings, and the woman from John Gray's office asking if I want to be trained as one of the very first facilitators to teach this Mars-Venus workshop, which John Gray was traveling around the country teaching every Saturday somewhere in the country. So I immediately jumped at the opportunity and went out and fell in love with his staff, fell in love with the material, you know, just fell in love with John. I mean, just the whole process. And I just knew what I wanted to do the rest of my life.
Awesome. That's awesome.
How it all began. Yeah, you just clicked, you know.
And I started
working. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I quickly became the training director, because I was the one out in the field, you know, actually teaching the workshops and recruiting other facilitators, other people to become Mars-Venus facilitators, and also just teaching the workshop itself. So
wow.
Then we had different workshops based on the different books that came out. So that was my role there, and I did a lot of speaking, a lot of teaching, a lot of coaching, a lot of writing articles for the MarsVenus.com website, and really immersed myself in the MarsVenus philosophy, and then started coming up with ideas of my own, which ended up being my book, which is Relationship Rules.
So now I'm going to ask you, what was your motivation behind writing Relationship Rules?
You know, my motivation behind it was, or two things. I was so frustrated and frustrated with people telling me what to do in terms of if I were to ask for help or they were to offer support, they would tell me what to do, but they never gave me the how to do what they were saying. And even when I was married, my husband and I went to 10 different marriage counselors, therapists, and they would tell us what to do, tell me what to do, and never give me the how-tos. So that was part of why my book has a how-to in it. And the other part that motivated me to write Relationship Rules was being a woman and being out there speaking on the MarsVenus principles, I started coming up with my own ideas and concepts that I could say because I was a woman that maybe John couldn't say because he was a man. You know, it was more acceptable for me to talk about a woman's, you know, monthly cycle than it would be for him, for instance. And then, you know, the idea of a no-go zone is a topic you can't talk about without having an argument. And I just, you know, they say when the book is ready, it will come out of you. And it did. It just, you know, poured out of me. And I wrote it and won an award right away, which is amazing. I got first place as a first-time author, which is amazing. And
wow.
John Gray has endorsed the book, and he, you know, he's called it a perfect summary of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, because it is very much immersed in the Mars-Venus philosophy. And I do believe it is a philosophy. You know, it has the north, the south, and the east, and the west, and the beginning and an end. And it has, you know, boundaries that you can come up against and know how to use the techniques and the skills and that he talks about and I talk about, actually.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. So now I'm going to ask, how have couples applied the ideas in Relationship Rules?
You know, people are very, very creative. I had a couple buy the book. They went on an 11-day cruise, and each day of the cruise, they decided they were going to talk about one of the rules in the book. And you know, what do you think? And did she write? And do you relate to this? And do you feel the same way? And I had another guy, he was single, and he bought the book, and he takes it on the first date, and he goes over the 12 rules, the mini versions. And if she doesn't agree, there's no second date. I have another gentleman who keeps his book, my book, on his nightstand and reads it every day because he wants to be, as he says, the best husband he can for his wife. He wants to understand her as best to his ability. You know, people keep it in the bathroom and just, you know, read it when they're in the bathroom. And it's that kind of book that you can just pick up and read one rule. You don't have to read it cover to cover in one sitting, but you can just, if you're having an argument, you can pick up the book and read the one about, you know how to take a time out when you're having an argument. And
okay.
So you can just read that one. So it's very applicable for whatever's going on in your life.
Right.
In that moment,
right.
Yeah.
Well, because you know what? No matter how well you're communicating with your significant other, or with anyone for that matter, an argument is going to be inevitable at some point. So,
yep.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, so people have gotten very creative about how they use the book, and I'm just happy that people now have a guidebook, if you will, so that they can keep the passion alive, because our hormones take care of us falling in love and creating passion and excitement. But those hormones last 6 to 9 months. And when we fall in love and we're with this person for, you know, years sometimes, decades, how do you keep the passion alive so you don't get bored with each other?
Well, that and is a very, very common problem.
And, you know, and that's what causes a wandering eye, and that's what causes emotional cheating or, you know, all kinds of things. And so if you can keep the passion alive and you can have fun doing it, there you go.
Right, that's what everybody really wants. Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? The other thing, too, is another factor as to why couples get bored with each other if they get married and they have kids. They're dealing with the daily responsibilities with having kids and the other daily tasks, and it's like they're bored. You know, they're bored with one another because there's nothing exciting anymore. So that's
so many couples stop having date night, especially after they have children.
And that's a big
it's a very big mistake. Because if you don't take time out, even if you have a family member, watch your kids, you have a picnic on the floor of the living room, you don't have to have money to have a date night. It's really, really important to stress that because, funds are tight for a lot of people and not everybody has, especially when you have children, babysitters are close to $10 an hour sometimes, depending where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And, then to go out on top of that. So, if you can do a trade with somebody, you watch your kids on Friday night, they watch your kids on Saturday night, and have your date night. And the thing about date night is, one of the really great things about date night is you have it to look forward to.
Yeah.
So all week long, when I was married, every Saturday night my husband and I went out, and we either went to dinner or went to a movie because we never could afford both with the babysitter, but we always went out. And even if we had had an argument that day, we still went out. We had a standing deal with the babysitter that she showed up every Saturday at 6 o'clock. And the thing is, you know you're going to have that time. As a woman, you know that even though you're taking care of the kids and you're working hard at work, if you work outside the home, or if you run your own business at home and you're trying to negotiate kids and running a business, and just take care of the home. Just knowing, you know what, when Saturday night comes, I'm going to have my time with my honey, and it's going to be just him and I and no kids. And it gives, when you have something to look forward to, it not only does it make you feel better, but it improves your brain chemistry, which also produces hormones that make you feel good about yourself. So there's just a bucket load of reasons why that is something that really works for couples. For the guy who's, guys, they love the bedroom. They love their wives in the bedroom. And if they know that every Saturday night there's a good chance they're going to get lucky, so to speak, he's going to be like, all over the, let's go out every Saturday night.
Yeah,
you know,
they'll be motivated to do it.
We need to do that. And in my book I talk about, when you do have date night, kids, work, and money are off limits in terms of conversation.
I got to say that's even a mistake I've made. You talk about kids and this and that about the kids. You're right. We should not talk about the kids. That's important because you're not worrying about the kids while you're out. So why bring them into the conversation? There's plenty of time during the week to do that. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's
it's just the time to focus on the two of you and why you fell in love and why you're together and, what makes your family, what makes you work as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And just, marriage counselors will do this all the time with couples who are just super unhappy. They'll ask them, how did you meet? How did you fall in love? What was it like? What was your courtship like? What was it like? And the whole reason they do that is to remind them of a time that they felt love for each other so that they can tap back into that. That's why they do that.
You get
stuck in resentment.
Oh, absolutely. It is. It really is. And that being said, how's the success rate with that initial falling in love thing being rekindled? Like, how successful is it really? Would you say it's half and half or happens more often than not?
Because that they're able to rekindle?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a firm believer that love doesn't die. Love doesn't go anywhere. Love can only change form.
Mm-hmm.
They're just rediscovering what's already there. That's what I believe.
I see.
You give the worst couple in the world that can't stand each other and you give them a date like they have on The Bachelor, I think they'll start liking each other a little bit more. You can violins on their favorite, celebrity, artists singing their favorite song on the beach with nobody there and, somebody coming in and dinner. I mean, you recreate something really romantic and, it's very easy to get in touch with those feelings. It's the stress of everyday life that keeps us from feeling those things.
Right, and the
other
complication.
We get into the routine, and everything's on a clock. You have to be at work a certain time.
Yeah.
Kids have to be at school a certain time. Daycare has to be picked up at a certain time.
Oh, I know.
You got a kid.
Yeah.
Bedtimes. Everything's. We live by the clock.
Yeah, we do.
And so we have to schedule in there, you know, fun and time for each other, you know. Time.
Yeah, but I wanted to ask, another complication that can arise with couples is they may want different things down the road. So how can they end up compromising if they want completely different things? Because the thing is, if one sacrifices one thing for the other, then there's going to be resentment again.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's true, because think about it. You know, about every 7 to 10 years, our mm-hmm. priorities change. When you're a teenager,
yeah.
you're trying to figure out who you are. You're trying, you know, then you go off to college, and you know, you're establishing your education and your career, what you're going to do for the rest of your life, how you're going to provide for yourself or a family. The next 10
mm-hmm.
years, 7 years of your life, you know, you've maybe met somebody, you're settling down, you're not partying, you're not doing the single thing, you're now a
right.
couple, maybe you buy a house, you know, and maybe you start having children. The next 7 to 10 years, you're raising children. Well, 7 to 10 years, more than that, to raise children, more like 20. And then you can leave, so then you're in another phase of your life where, you know, you're not getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning and taking kids to school and, you know, living by the school schedule. And
well, unless you got
so
your
now you're an empty nester, and so your the priorities change.
Yeah.
So
not unless you got your parents.
If we're not,
yeah.
Pardon me.
Not unless you have your parents to take care of, because once the kids leave, a lot of times you have your parents to care for as they age.
Yeah,
so.
Add that to the mix. And so, mm-hmm. given that we change that much, our priorities change. That's why people dating somebody 20, 30 years their age, I always think, what do you talk about? Because you're in a different phase of your life, even if you have something in common in terms of chemistry, your priorities are so different. And so if we don't communicate what's going on with us, we don't communicate our needs, wants, desires, we don't have respect for our partner's needs, wants, and desires, there's no way we can
mm-hmm.
grow through those years and those changes that come every 7 to 10 years and as our
mm-hmm.
priorities change. We have to be communicating.
Yes,
to be
it's very important
in our relationship. Yeah, you know, so many people stay together. I meet so many people who are married and they get divorced at the 23 mark, which is usually when the kids go off to college.
Right, right.
So for
yeah,
some reason, people
it makes sense.
Seem to think, well, you know, if I stay till the kids go off to college, then
mm-hmm.
it won't be as
mm-hmm.
bad. It's bad at any age. Divorce is never
mm-hmm.
a good thing.
No,
you know,
there's
it
a lot
affects
of
your children at any age.
Yeah, even if
right.
they're 30 years old, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I had the best divorce ever of anybody I know, and, you know, it still wasn't
mm-hmm.
a walk in the park.
But you know what? So many, I've even heard of divorce parties happening. So many, especially with women, a lot of them are so happy that they did it. So that's, I'm sure it's an ordeal going through the divorce, but maybe in some cases it might be the right thing. Maybe in some cases it may be for the best.
Yeah, it may be for the best. But, you know, sometimes with women when they do that, it's like they're discovering themselves for the first time. It's just unfortunate it's showing up in this timing-wise.
Right.
You know,
right.
Had they discovered themselves at an earlier age before they got married, they might not be having this epiphany that they don't want to be with this person.
Oh,
because
okay.
they've now found themselves, you know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's true for everyone, but sometimes that is true because we as women, we're still socialized to be polite. We're still socialized to go along with the flow and not create waves or cause trouble or, you know, just because I want to go to a Mexican restaurant, everybody else wants Chinese food. I'm not going to make a big deal about it. And, you know, we're socialized
mm-hmm.
to be
mm-hmm.
like that. And so
mm-hmm.
we can easily get into a marriage where, you know, I've met plenty of women, especially my age, who married for security. They didn't marry for love.
Mm-hmm.
They married for security. I can't
right.
even relate to that personally, but that was important to them, and it was more important to them than love. And so that's what they did. But you have to then work within, I'm going to be married to this person for the rest of my life based on I'm married for security versus, and I think that
right.
they grow to love them, but I don't know that their heart goes, ooh, when they walk in a room.
Well,
you know,
can I tell you a little
them.
Story? Can I tell you a little story?
Sure.
We do have some time here, so I want to talk about my grandparents now that they're both deceased, actually. My grandfather absolutely adored my grandmother. However, he didn't make a lot of money, and he was extremely stingy. He watched every single penny. My grandmother really, really wanted a high life. She didn't really love him all that much. How do I know? Because she admitted it after he passed away. So, you know, there must have been just so many years of resentment there. She was always extremely unhappy. My mother would say how obsessive she was about things and how unhappy she was. And she just didn't love him, but at the same time, he adored her. And he did pass away before she did, but I actually asked her. I was, I don't know, I think I was around 21 when I asked her. She had some, this was just a few, she actually lived quite a few years after he passed away, and I'm wondering if that's when she really discovered herself. But I said to her, if you would have married Grandpa, would you have done it again? She goes, absolutely not. So you know what? I think just so many marriages are so stuck like this because so, you know, one wants one thing, the other wants something else, or one really wants one thing and the other just won't bend, just like that. So it's unfortunate that this happens a lot more often than not, especially.
It is unfortunate. Under this group exercise for couples when they get into that what do they call it, kind of a stalemate, standoff, you know, where I'm not going to give in unless you give in. Well, I'm not going to give in until you get in. Who's going to go first? And you know, they may not even be verbally or consciously thinking in that, but maybe even unconsciously behaving that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great exercise where, let's say my partner and I are at a standstill. That's the word I was looking for. And so I say, here's three things I want. It says I want one thing, you want one thing. Here's three things I want. Which one can you give me? And then he you know, evaluates my little short list of three things. And then he says, okay, I can do number three. I can't do number one, I can't do number two, but I can commit to do number three. And then he says, here's three things I want from you. I want you to whatever, whatever, whatever. And I say, okay, I can do number one. So I got some of what I wanted and get all of what I wanted. He got some of what he wanted and get all of what he wanted. So it helps eliminate resentment. Because if I give in once, I give in twice. And the thing is, women will give, thinking, and they'll give with a smile on their face, thinking, any moment now, he'll realize what an awesome woman I am and do something nice for me or give me what I'm wanting or whatever the case may be, right? So we just give with this, and he's thinking, she's doing all these nice things for me. She has a smile on her face. I must be doing something right.
Meanwhile,
so
that's a breeding ground for resentment.
It is a breeding ground for resentment. But you can't blame her because she's giving with a smile on her face. And it's just a lack of communication. You know, she doesn't want to be demanding because she doesn't want to be called. Or maybe they're getting along and she doesn't want to bring something up that could, you know, upset their getting alongness at the time. And so it's so important to keep the lines of communication open. And here I say that, but without telling people how, there's no way. What I've learned about life and what I've learned about people is you have to teach them and you have to, you know, people learn best and it lasts the longest in baby steps. And so you say, okay, just try doing this one little thing just a little bit differently. Like when you come home from work, just try finding your wife and giving her a kiss. It takes a half a minute, five times a week. Not a lot of time out of your schedule. Won't really interrupt what you already have going on. And then look at the results you get. Because sometimes women will even, you know, we'll even kind of not hide, but make ourselves not very easy to find when they get home just to see if they will come find us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like instead of greeting them at the door, maybe we're, you know, in the closet reorganizing the shelves, and so we want to see if they'll come find us or how long it'll take them to come find us or notice that we're even home or not. Depending on the case. You know, and so, you know, what women, we have this, it's not that there's something wrong with us, but our brains are wired to connect all the time. That's what makes us great mothers. Right? And that it carries over into our relationships. That's why girls talk to their girlfriends all the time. That's why we, you know, can text our best friend 80,000 times a day. That need to connect, it makes us feel good about ourselves. And men can interpret that as needy or clingy or insecure, and it isn't. That's part of who we are. That's part of how our brains are wired. And so I come up with this formula. This is another reason I wanted to write my book. Came up with this formula that women will, at any moment, on any day, at any time, we take what you give, say, and do. We add them all up together, and that's how you care. That's how much you care about us in that moment. And you know, now we have a new moment, and it's like, so how do you feel about me in this moment? You know, when I was teaching the Mars Venus workshops, a lot of times couples would want to come, and the women would say to me, well, what if we come to this workshop and he realizes he doesn't love me after all?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if he realizes he does, you know, want to be out of this relationship? What if we don't get the result that is planned and, you know, that we're looking for? Yeah, I mean, that's what happened to me. You know, my husband, my husband and I went to see John Gray when he came to town. This is way before he ever was training anybody. Came into his 8-hour workshop. We went. And 2 days later, my husband moved out, and he never came back. It happened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
it does.
And I called John's office. I was like, you ruined my marriage. I was like, no, it was just already going to happen. And they're right. Mm. You know, now that enough years have gone by, I can look back and, you know, it was going to happen anyways. But, you know, so a lot of times, just the insecurity of, I don't know how much this person loves me, can keep couples from doing personal growth and marriage education and couples, at, you know, communication workshops. Just that one little fear. I can't tell you how many times couples would show up totally angry with each other and walk in the door with a sourpuss look on their face, like, oh God, what's this going to be like? And we have to strip down and get naked. And, you know, they always try to do this horrible experience. And then they'd leave just saying, why aren't there more people here? How come more people don't do this? I was like, remember when you first got here? You know, and you ask any couple, would you spend 8 hours a year and $100 each to improve the quality of your marriage? And people will say, well, of course, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
They'll pay, you know, we pay divorce lawyers ridiculous, insane amounts of money to fight over stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so much can be, you know, so many relationships that can be easily repaired with some communication and relationship skills and a coach that can help them through that.
So I'm going to ask you now, all of these pointers that you're giving out, is that going to be in your next book, which is Peace, Love, and Happiness, 50 Strategies for Navigating Love and Life?
You know, that Peace, Love, and Happiness is, it's a guidebook for somebody who, let's say you had no life skills, you raised in an orphanage, nobody taught you anything. Peace, Love, and Happiness, it's kind of a life skills book in that it tells you how to navigate change. It tells you how to listen and making the decision ahead of time to listen and the benefits of doing that. It tells you, you know, there's one of my favorites is what's wrong with being right. Everything's wrong with being right. Being right is like, you know, the only person who cares about being right is me. And even if I get to be right, it only lasts 5 minutes, a couple minutes.
Yeah.
And it separates me from you. It's like, me making you wrong does not foster passion and love in a relationship.
No, it doesn't.
You
absolutely
know, maybe in the
not.
Workplace, is, you know, if you come in with an answer before your coworker, it works in the workplace, but at home, it doesn't work. And so being right it doesn't facilitate a loving relationship. But so when people realize all the things wrong with being right, and really being wrong is an opportunity for you to learn something new that you didn't know, given an open mind, It changes the whole game, playing field of, you know, I have to be right versus I can't be wrong.
No, you're right. And you know what? Unfortunately, one thing that I'm going to be right about here is that we are almost out of time. So, you know what? Just let us know where people can find you. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to write a blog post with an archived podcast, and I'm going to share it with all my connections. So this way people can access this podcast. And they'll find your information and whatever you'd like to share. So just give us let us know how people can connect with you.
Well, my website is full of information. It's janicehoffman.com is my website. They can email me at janice@janicehoffman.com. And I have a blog with lots of articles and some funnies on there and some relationship skills advice. And some of the tips that are in my book are on my blog. And if they want to do some coaching, they can certainly contact me for that. If they want an autographed copy of my book, they can get one on my website for the same price as Amazon. And then my book is also available on Kindle. So, and I'd love to hear from any. Love to hear from listeners.
Thank you so much. You were excellent. Have a great day and have a great week, everyone. Bye for now.
You too.